You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS.
And Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, August 15th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District, New York City. Today on the program, no guest. Late breaking news. We just had a guest cancel. Apparently there was some wires crossed, but that's okay. On the program today, the recent, well, I guess not that recent, but a month or two ago, spate of laws passed in Russia essentially outlawing gays or outlawing anyone in the LGBT community or anyone who is in any way not homophobic from talking about gay people, and the ongoing movement to push the IOC from canceling the Olympics in Russia and moving it to Vancouver, as well as protests around the country boycotting Russian vodka. Also, Egypt really in a, well, literally in a state of emergency, but just tragic circumstances there. The death toll is now above 500 people by the government estimation. It could very well be higher. President Obama speaking this morning regarding Egypt. We will cover that also. Rahm Emanuel in Chicago. It is quite clear now that what the Chicago Teachers Union was claiming when they were protesting the closing of 50 schools was exactly correct. Also, the if you're looking for a perfect example of a media representative who simply parrots what the government wants, not even parrots and amplifies. I don't know. What kind of bird is that? A really loud parrot. We've got an example for you. The TEPCO in Japan dealing with Fukushima, that disaster, is not only not over, but apparently could get worse. And in a bit of news that has sent basically Matt into an apoplectic frenzy, a World Wrestling, what does the E stand for?
Entertainment.
Well, World Wrestling, let's just call it WWE. World Wrestling Entertainment Superstar has the most casual of announcement that he is gay. Bradley Manning speaks in unsworn testimony in his sentencing hearing. We will get to it. It is really, it's disturbing. In part what he said, but more so just what has been done to him. The whole thing just reeks of a show trial. And in many respects, his prosecution has been a show prosecution, and this sort of caps it in many respects. With Obama on vacation and getting slammed for it, somebody does a not-so-terribly deep dive into who took the most days on vacation. And even though I talked about this quite a bit back in the day, I was shocked to see the number of days George Bush took for vacation during it dwarfs mine.
I swear he went on vacation more than he did actually work in the
office. No, yeah. That's not accurate, but the numbers are still staggering. You were a young man at that time.
It felt like that. I remember.
Thinking about his record, though, I'm glad he took that much time off.
Well, yeah.
There's just a lot of brush to clear.
Rand Paul on who his pick for the Fed will be. We'll give you the actual quotes. And new reports that over the next week to 10 days, we're going to see a massive mobilization by fast food workers across the country. So we will get to all that today. We're going to take calls early, 646-257-3920. If you are one of those, I don't know, I guess we have now about 60, 70, I don't know exactly the number, beta testers who are listening to the program, or I don't know if they're listening live on the program, but they have we have 60 to 70 beta testers of our iOS and our Android app. What Kyle has been able to do with this Android app, let me tell you something. Every entity that I approached to build the app, and I approached probably half a dozen, and the quotes for building the app ranged from thousands to tens of thousands. They all told me it was virtually impossible to build an Android app, a native Android app, because of the different hardware configurations and whatnot. Not only has Kyle done that, but he has achieved a staggering 97% compliance with Android apps going back to some of the earliest versions of their operating system. Now, this stuff is sort of, I guess it's pure navel gazing on my part, but that's all I've been really doing for weeks is just staring at my navel in this respect. And I'm really proud of, and it's really, it's Kyle did it, but I'm proud of myself that I finally managed to screw up so many attempts at the app that we timed it in a way that Kyle could do it. And so I will give myself that slight amount of credit, whereas I was beating myself up for it. We're going to release this app. Right now, it looks like we're going to be able, assuming all goes well in the different marketplaces, within the first week or two of September. Kyle gave us a cut rate. Still, he has spent many hours working on it, but it's going to be worth it.
Who would have guessed that the guy to create our app would have also been the same guy who created our website?
Well, he not just created the website. He basically made it possible to do this show.
And phone system and everything else.
I can tell you there would be no version of this Majority Report without Kyle. I can say that unequivocally. And what he's doing with this app is just really, it's unbelievable. If you are listening to the app live, you know that you can do a one-touch call to the show. That's all you have to do. You don't even have to know the number. I don't have to say 646-257-3920 is the number to call. We'll probably take some IMs, but first let's turn to Egypt. The parallel that, as I've been researching both this Egypt situation and the story of and what's going on in Russia, to a certain extent, and maybe less so with Russia, but there are situations where we have very little leverage. And once it's clear that as in terms of our foreign policy, we do not have as a government, as a U.S. government, leverage, the question then becomes, all right, what do we do? Which may not impact the specific issue at hand, but will have broader implications for our foreign policy. That, I think, is a far more apt description in some respects in terms of Egypt than it will be in terms of Russia. But and I think that'll be clear as we talk about it. As of this morning, the death toll, as reported by the health ministry in Egypt, is at 525, injured at over 3,500. These are government numbers. They very well may be higher. The Muslim Brotherhood is putting out numbers that are a multiple of three of those, really, or maybe more. The death toll the Muslim Brotherhood is putting out is 2,600, injured at around 10,000. It's very difficult to say. There has been violence, and actually greater violence outside of even Cairo, around the country. Just to recap, 6 weeks ago, and we spoke to Juan Cole about this, and it's worth going back and listening to that interview if you didn't have a chance at that time. Juan Cole's perception, and he had been in Egypt at the time, or at least in the weeks leading up to the coup, which is looking more now in hindsight as a coup, I think, than it was as it was happening in some respects. There was massive popular resistance to the Morsi government. What factors were driving that, I think Juan Cole laid out quite well. I think it was a combination of things. Clearly, the military and the police force was very anti-Muslim Brotherhood in some respects. And I think it's also clear that to a certain extent, at the very least, elements of the military, if not the military writ large, was waiting and probably priming the pump. But there were millions of people who had popular resistance to Morsi. It is now clear that the military made a decision yesterday or the day before to basically destroy or attempt to destroy the Muslim Brotherhood. We mentioned yesterday that Mohammed al-Baradi, who was the Nobel Prize winning, I guess, interim vice president, resigned yesterday, left the government that is run by the general Isti, Sisi. And not exactly the name that you would anticipate for a autocratic dictator. I'm sorry.
Maybe
folks.
Exactly the name.
Yes. This story from Reuters, at this point, it seems to me that I would imagine many governments are scrambling. But from Reuters yesterday, Western allies warned Egypt's military leaders right up to the last minute against using force to crush protest sit-ins by supporter of the ousted Islamist president, Mohamed Morsi. We had a political plan that was on the table that had been accepted by the other side. He was speaking of the Muslim Brotherhood, said the EU envoy, Bernardino Leon, who co-led the mediation effort with the U.S. Deputy Secretary of State, William Burns. They could have taken this option, so all that has happened today was unnecessary. Some of the toughest U.S. messages were delivered personally to Sisi in almost daily telephone calls from Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. Now, understand, we give about $1.5 billion annually in economic aid, which goes primarily to the military. Much of that, though certainly not all of it, And I'm not quite sure exactly what the breakdown is. Of course, aid to the military, which then basically comes in services in kind. We're going to give you $1.5 billion in aid. Some of it will be cash. Some of it will be weapons that we're going to use that money to buy from U.S. defense contractors. And then, of course, we'll ship it to you, to Egypt.
And it's just important to add, too, that, you know, like the Egyptian military owns like hotels and resorts. They're in
much
every
of the
single
economy,
part of the economy.
Many
there.
Of the industries are literally run by the Egyptian army. And that's been the case for quite some time. They are a much broader institution, I guess you could say, than just being the military. Sisi and the hardline interior minister, Mohamed Ibrahim, according to the Reuters story, were explicitly warned that al-Baradei would resign if they chose force over negotiation, supposedly robbing the military of its principal source of liberal civilian respectability. The hardliners have remarkable ability to ignore reality, said an anonymous source who was involved in the diplomatic exchanges. The Egyptian military source said public outrage, the same source was an Egyptian military source, said public outrage after critical comments by visiting U.S. Senators John McCain and Lindsey Graham last week and leaked reports of a possible deal between the authorities and the Brotherhood had put the army in a tough position. This is obviously some spin that is coming from the Egyptian military. To the extent that the hardliners in the Egyptian military believe this stuff, we can't know. But to the extent that they're using it as an excuse is relevant. And so congratulations, Lindsey Graham and John McCain, for at least injecting yourselves into this. You should be sitting in your offices right now sending apology notes to just about every member of Egyptian society at this point. I don't know how much the military was boxed in by these things, but at the very least, they're using it for propaganda purposes. Once again, the U.S. government provides $1.5 billion in aid to the Egyptian military. You should know that Arab nations had lined up 6 weeks ago to provide $12 billion of aid in the event that the U.S. government, in addition to actually providing a lot of that aid, but they were willing to supplement were willing, not only were willing, but did. They opened up a lot of the market reserves. We had talked about that with Juan Cole. They are willing to basically replace that U.S. aid. Now, with that said, President Obama came out today and gave a press conference with the U.S. reaction, and it was, I think, anemic is a pretty good description. He basically said we need the will of the Egyptian people to be listened to. We deplore this violence. And as such, we're going to show how much we deplore it by canceling a joint military exercise with the Egyptian military. No word yet on a response from the Egyptian military, but one can imagine it's thanks. We're pretty tied up right now anyways with our own exercises with live rounds.
We're pretty active at the moment.
That's right.
I could tell you what, like, Frank Gaffney and Glenn Beck heard Obama say, though.
What was that?
They heard him say, to my brothers in the Muslim Brotherhood, fight the infidels.
Right.
Allah,
of course.
Akbar.
Of course. Of course. And, but they're largely irrelevant players in this, I think. You know, yeah. The idea that President Obama is afraid of, in some ways, being seen as being pro-Muslim Brotherhood, I think is probably low on the list of their calculations. The real issue here is that it is quite clear that that $1.5 billion is not buying us a lot of leverage with the Egyptian military. And to the extent that we had built up relationships by training most of their leadership, it's quite clear that we don't have the leverage necessary to impact the outcome of anything on the short term in Egypt. And there's been, as far as I can tell, close to a near universal call by people who are experts in this region to cut off funding now. At the very least, to say we need to do a serious policy review, we're going to cut off a portion of our funding, and we're going to review the rest going forward. Because while we may not be able to impact events on the ground in Egypt in the short term or the midterm, the question is what signal are we sending to the broader region and to people on the ground in the broader region? Will we tolerate massacres of 500, 1,000, 2,000 people? Now, it seems clear that President Obama has the authority to, at the very least, suspend this military aid. And I don't know. This is one of those situations where we really can't impact it. All we can do is send a message to the broader region.
I disagree a little bit.
Well, cut off his mic.
Well, do tell.
I
think, first of all, in terms of the message to the broader region, it's not as pivotal a country as Egypt, but we've been supporting Bahrain through their crackdown for like the past couple years, basically. And I think the other thing with Egypt, where we exert our leverage, is much more vis-a-vis their policy to Israel, which didn't really change under the Muslim Brotherhood and won't change under the military. So we're like picking and choosing where we actually have pressure points with them. And that's not primarily on human rights and these types of issues. Those are secondary. So I think the real issue is the peace agreement with Israel and the broader like strategic interests that we perceive there. And that's been pretty continuous, actually, amongst both sides, whether the Brotherhood or the military.
So your point is that to the extent that we have leverage, it is in a very compartmentalized, which is not too... Which is
if
not
they
to negate the
unilaterally
importance.
Stepped out of the peace arrangement with Israel, as an example, or radically changed the flow of goods to Gaza, you might see a much more aggressive set of actions taken, and the and we might also
now,
see
but that also
us
begs the
calling
question
the
as
Gulf
to whether
states
or not,
and it, saying, actually, we have a problem with you buffering this.
Yes, I mean, but does. Is it necessarily in the interests of the military to change course in terms of the relationships with Israel?
Oh, it's not at all. I'm not saying I'm getting just really specific to what we have leverage over. I don't think it's in Egypt's interest to back out of peace with Israel. I'm saying that the pressure points we choose that we do have
but
and when
the
we choose
has
to exert
to be, the question
are
has
not
to
about
be.
Human rights in
right.
Egypt.
Yeah.
And that's
well,
been clear for a long time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it certainly belies what we've been saying publicly. And that hypocrisy, I think, is becoming all too clear. And so, you know, and if the implication is it's not in Egypt's interest necessarily to take a more aggressive posture with Israel, then the value, the opportunity cost of trying to exercise that leverage with the military aid is not so great. In other words, we pull that. We're not necessarily that may be what we use our leverage for, but we may not necessarily need that leverage.
No,
in
exactly.
The way that we need
because there's no incentive amongst anybody really in any type of rational position in the Egyptian in any part of Egyptian political leadership to shift that, including a lot of people in the Muslim Brotherhood. You know, nothing really changed as far as those dynamics went. So. I think we do have some pressure points. We're just not going to use them for human rights, basically.
Perhaps. I mean, but I don't know that that – I mean, I guess. I mean, I see what you're saying here. Is it – but the –
When we – I mean, we pulled the plug on Mubarak, the Gulf states were enraged, but they had to deal with it. This is a situation where we haven't gone around to them and pulled our own aid out. And I'm not saying it would change the situation. I'm saying we do have more ability to project influence there, but we're not going to choose to do it for this type of issue. That's what my assessment would be.
All right. I mean, that's even a more depressing assessment in some respects. And perhaps maybe cynicism is warranted. It's Michael sits over there in his cynicism corner.
Egypt and America, there's cynicism. Makes sense.
All right. Fair enough, Michael. 646-257-3920. We were going to talk to Julia Ayafi today about her piece in the New Republic, about some reporting that she did when she was in Russia about being gay, essentially being gay in Russia. Understand that there have been 3 laws passed over the past several months in Russia, which first off, ban distributing gay propaganda to minors. The law's broad definition of propaganda would prohibit publicly discussing gay relationships, comparing them to heterosexual ones, or calling them normal. In other words, it more or less criminalizes the act of coming out as gay or being gay publicly, or expressing it in any way. There is also a law passed about gay people having children, essentially. Not just adopting, but even if the child is the biological child of one of 2 gay parents, that is still illegal. As well as foreigners adopting, gay foreigners adopting children. There have been a massive rise in violence against people in the LGBT community there. And it's quite clear, I mean, obviously, the scary thing about this, and one of the things I wanted to talk to Julia about, and hopefully we'll have her on in the future, is to get a sense of how much these laws have increased homophobia there, how much they have, how much was pre-existing, how it is now dangerous, simply dangerous, to be identified as a gay person in Russia. And there has been a tremendous debate within and without the gay community in this country and internationally as to what they should do and what people who believe in human rights, frankly, should do in response. Now, obviously, Russia is not the only country in the world that has this type of institutionalized anti-gay homophobia and persecution. But it is particularly scary in the context of Russia because it's quite clear that this is being done as a way of developing a scapegoat to turn pressure away from the domestic failings of the Putin regime. And this is an old story. It's why you're starting to see a lot of comparisons, particularly in regards to the Olympics, to the situation in Germany in 1933. When you see the growing, I guess, move to scapegoat one group of people in a country as a way of channeling the frustrations that people have in their domestic life. And that would include also appeasing the Russian Orthodox Church. I mean, what you're seeing is, in some respects, an attempt to quash Mardinity. And this is part of that program. So we have now the Olympics, the Winter Olympics for 2014, scheduled to be in Russia, in Sochi. And there is a movement afoot to get the IOC, the governing body of the Olympics, to essentially cancel the Olympics in 2014 and move it to 2015 and have them in Vancouver. Part of this this movement has been stoked by the IOC basically threatening. I don't know if threaten is the right word, but yes, I think threatening gay athletes. That any athlete who speaks out, and not just gay athletes, any athlete who speaks out against the discriminatory laws in Russia may also be disciplined by the IOC committee. This is a report from Gay Star News. They were asked what it was planning to do to ensure that LGBT individuals can have a visible, proud, safe presence at the Games, but was told the Winter Games are no place for political statements. The Olympic own charter describes such things as propaganda, which, of course, is the same word being used by the Russians in their new anti-gay law. Under Rule 50 of the IOC charter, no kind of demonstration of political, religious, or racial propaganda is permitted in any Olympic sites, venues, or other areas. The one of the questions and the pushback that I have seen, and I saw an interview with Stephen Cohen, who is a longtime Russian expert, on Charlie Rose last night, and he said one of the dangers of having a, and I don't know that he was speaking about protests that emanate from the international, internationally, but one of the things he said that is tricky in this situation is nationalism and nativism in Russia is a fast growing dangerous movement, and it would make it rather easy to play into those nationalist sentiments if these protests were seen as coming from the West as opposed to, I guess, sort of a broader human rights question. In other words, this can easily be manipulated to create a worse situation in Russia. I mean, this is the same dynamic that we've seen play out in Iran. We see it in Cuba. Frankly, we saw it in this country during the Iraq War. Whenever you have a leadership that is struggling in the polls, nationalism is the big go-to. And the boogeyman outside of your country that poses some type of threat to you existentially or in terms of your sovereignty is always a very convenient vehicle to strengthen your hand domestically. With that said, there's also a protest in this country that Dan Savage has started. Dan Savage is the author and columnist and I think radio host, podcast. He started a boycott of Russian vodka, and it has been called in some quarters the the Stoli boycott. There was some question as to whether or not Stolichana vodka was actually a Russian vodka. According to interviews that they've given a year or two ago, they claim that the vodka comes from Russia. They just bottle it in Latvia. Now, that said, the Stoli CEO has been a strong proponent of gay rights and has come out and said so. Yet, an interesting piece in The Atlantic saying the Russian vodka boycott is working, whether you like it or not. And the measure in which that Russian vodka boycott is working is that it has raised public awareness. At least if you use Google searches as a gauge to what's going on in Russia. And certainly, it was one of the things that first called my attention to these laws in Russia. I certainly wasn't aware of them when they were passed, I guess, earlier in the summer, in the spring, or being debated in early spring, late winter. So that's the situation there. I mean, I was hoping to speak to a Russian expert to get a real notion of the dynamics of the politics in Russia as to the efficacy of these different approaches. But there has been a strong push to get the Olympics moved. And we will update that as it goes.
There's also this story that came out today where Andy Cohen, who's he's like a Bravo late night host.
Yes, I should say that Andy Cohen got his first TV appearance on my show, Pilot Season.
Oh, really?
Yes, when he was a Bravo executive. I put him in the last scene. All the Bravo executives were in the last scene of Pilot Season.
Thanks, Sam.
So I've worked with Andy, and yes, I did see this story, but go ahead.
Okay, well, he is usually a co-host for Miss Universe, and this year Miss Universe will be taking place in Russia, and he said he has turned down the co-hosting gig because he doesn't feel safe over there as a gay man.
Yes, apparently Andy Cohen is gay. I didn't know if you're familiar with his work, that may not have been clear to you, but...
I just wanted to make sure for people who don't know who Andy Cohen
is. Yes. And good for him.
Good for him. And with these laws, that's also like a very valid concern. These apply to people traveling into the country as well.
It's a valid concern. I think it also is he's making a strong political statement. And so good for Andy. All right, the number 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me at Majority FM. In the better half of the program, we're going to talk about that Chicago story, Fukushima. We're going to make Matt Binder's day by talking about the WWE superstar. We will discuss Bradley Manning's unsworn testimony in his sentencing hearing. And we've got... sound from wonderful sound from Donnie Deutsch that almost really needs no comment. We will talk about that.
We also have a congressman who has a really interesting view of what crime is.
That's right. Fascinating. All that and more. Folks, your membership makes this a show possible. You can become a member today at majority.fm. Once you become a member and you get the app, you will never be without the ability to basically press two buttons on your phone, three buttons, three clicks away from listening to any show that we have done over the past 2.5 years. Three clicks is all it takes. If you're not a member, you get to listen to, you have access to some of our past shows. But if you're a member, you have access not only to the extra shows, but to all the shows at your fingertips. It is a stunning achievement, and your membership will mean that I dip less into Saul's 529 to pay for the app. So become a member today. We're going to take a break. 646-257-3920. We'll be right back.